Welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, folks, if you wanted to watch Tiger Woods in the TGL Championship, I sure hope that you didn't look away, because the match lasted just 90 minutes instead of 2 hours. It went 10 holes instead of 15. Tiger Woods hit only four full shots, and Jupiter Lynx, aka Jupiter Stinks, was eliminated. Please make sure to go online and snag all of your championship LAGC gear. Rex, after a day of endless hype and buildup, including by you on Golf Today on Tuesday, were you lifted up or let down by Tuesday night's finale?
I appreciate you not giving away confidences here, because I did send out a text message as soon as it ended. And I think it was something along the lines of that was the most anticlimactic thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So I owe a bit of
it. Use a different word besides thing.
Yeah, I might have. It was an adult evening. I might have been a little blue on that front. I do want to circle back around, because after I sent it, I did start feeling a little bad, because that takes away from LACC, what they were able to do. It was amazing. When you finish the season with three consecutive eagles, that's the baddest walk-off I can absolutely imagine in any sport. Even if you're not a fan of TGL, even if you're not a fan of golf, you have to acknowledge. I mean, that's like three consecutive Grand Slams to win the World Series or something like that. I know that's an extreme comparison, and please, I'm just trying to make a point here. Just don't take anything away from what Justin Rose and Tommy Fleetwood and Sahith Theegala did, because it was a phenomenal night for them.
Sure.
I think my disappointment was, well, twofold. One, I'm not good at math. Don't make me do math. I mean, if you're on TV and there's math to be done, don't make the person sitting at home try to figure it out, because they make the third eagle. They're up 9-2. There's five holes to play and they have one hammer. And I'm sort of scribbling in my mind, trying to carry the one. And before I could actually get to, oh, this is over, the team start hugging. And I guess that was my frustration, that really there was no drama. We didn't want to paint that picture a little bit better. You didn't want Marty Smith in there with the microphone ready to start interviewing players. So that was a little anticlimactic for my taste. Again, I don't want to take anything away from LA. That was a phenomenal finish. And then you're right. I mean, I think we all hyped up Tiger Woods. It's the first time we've seen him competitive at all in 314 days since the 2024 Open Championship. I know this is different. It's indoors. You pointed out he hit four full shots. I didn't see anything in those four full shots that either leads me to believe that, yes, he's going to play the Masters, or absolutely no, he's not going to play the Masters. Didn't really get a chance to see if there was any speed there, is really what I was hoping to see, only because Eamon Lynch, just stop. I'm trying to be professional here. What a child. What an absolute child.
He has got to be revved. Rex, he has got to be revved up for today's show.
I'm sure he's got ahead of steam coming in here. I wanted to see the speed. I wanted to see the numbers. That's the cool thing about TGL in my mind. And I didn't really get a glimpse of that. In Tiger's defense, one of those drives was a stinger, which was really cool that he hit. But you're not going to see real ball speed numbers on that one. And the other seemed like it was kind of a bunt driver. So I was disappointed on two fronts on that one.
So, yeah, let's reverse it. I think overall, used the word anticlimactic. Yeah, that was a little bit of a rant. I think it's okay to say that it was a dud, because it was a dud. And that's certainly unfortunate for some of our friends over there, and how much I think everyone was at least curious, if not otherwise looking forward to what was going to unfold on Tuesday night. But look, this happens in competition. You know, not every event can be Game 7 of the World Series between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays, and how exciting that was. Look at this year's Super Bowl. Incredibly flat. Incredibly disappointing if you're a sports fan. So, like, this sort of thing happens. I would actually equate it, Rex, to like an NCAA Cinderella team that got hot and it started mowing down some of the favorites. And then eventually, ultimately, it ran out of steam and got flattened by a clearly superior opponent towards the end, which I think is what happened in the championship match against LAGC. There's nothing wrong with that. I think, if anything, it sort of hit back against some of the conspiracy theorists who said this thing could be rigged if Tiger's team made it all the way to the championship after finishing last a year ago. If all of a sudden guys were whiffing 3-foot putts and there was mysterious aces, I think that could have been led to a meltdown on social media. Instead, I think it was a pretty inspired performance to get to that point. And then the best team on Tuesday and Monday won the competition. Let's reverse a little bit, Rex, as you and I talked about this on Tuesday's roundtable. The fact that Tiger Woods was even playing certainly was a surprise. When we did the podcast 2 days earlier, we were taking Tiger Woods at his word when he said that he was not going to play. He was merely going to serve in the coach slash captain role because he didn't want to disrupt some of the team chemistry. I'm not sure what necessarily compelled him off the sidelines, off the bench. Maybe it was Kiz hitting 150-yard three woods that finally said, enough is enough. Obviously, Akshay Bhatia, the best player on Jupiter Lynx, aka Jupiter Stinks, was actually playing the Hero India Open this week on the DP World Tour. So he was unavailable and was going to be unavailable of the championship match regardless. But what did you make of Tiger actually deciding to tee it up at all? Did you think it was merely a cheap publicity stunt, or do you think that he was actually curious to see if he could do it?
If it was a cheap publicity stunt, as you suggest, and I can see why you're even suggesting that, then why tell everyone last week that, no, I'm not going to do it? Like, it doesn't add up. If Tiger Woods was going to step in and try to be Willis Reed at the last minute and lead his team to victory, why wouldn't you have just done this last week and try to get the most out of whatever was the marketing?
Because it's more dramatic when you could announce it.
It is, but if you're ESPN, wouldn't you rather just been able to run promos for the last week and a half? I mean, I don't understand. I'm not in marketing, but it seems to me it's much better if you have 2 weeks to promote an event than if you have essentially 24 hours, which it didn't even have 24 hours. I think it was 12 hours from the time the news broke, which was right around midnight, I believe, on Tuesday night.
It was like 20 hours.
Yeah, whatever the case may be. And it wasn't even a huge splash. I think the news was broken on Tiger Woods' social channels and TGL's social channels. And then Scott Van Pelt said it on the late Sports Center on ESPN. So it's not as though you were able to really maximize it. I know you and I spent pretty much all day talking about it on Tuesday because it was Tiger Woods. And yeah, I know that there was
legitimate news value.
There was. And I think Tiger Woods makes everything better. We had Justin Rose on morning drive on Golf Today. And he talked about the idea of how much Tiger still holds that cachet. That even all of these years later, even at 50 years old, even at this diminished competitive capacity of his, he is still going to generate interest. I will be curious, and I usually don't really care what the numbers, what the ratings are for an event like this or any event. Like, it doesn't matter if it's on Golf Channel, on ESPN, whatever the case may be. I think the ratings have a tendency to ebb and flow depending on what else is going on in the sports world, what else is going on in the world at the moment. But my guess is they were very good last night, and for no other reason than it was Tiger Woods. There was this curiosity, even if it was just going to be four full shots of seeing Tiger Woods hit that. And I'm going to continue to justify that. Like, it should have been the lead item on everyone's website on Tuesday morning. And it pretty much was, at least in the golf sphere, even on ESPN. It should have been the lead item on Golf Today yesterday. And I think
it was.
It should have been the lead item on Golf Central. This is what Tiger Woods does. He's the engine that drives everything. He has been now for decades, and that's not going to change just because he doesn't compete as much as we'd like to see him.
Yeah, I think this was the first time all year in 2026 that a TGL story was leading our homepage. I think it was the first time all year that a TGL story led Golf Today. It was the first time all year that a TGL story was leading Golf Central. Like, there was a legitimate news peg to Tiger Woods competing. And that's why, like, the move certainly felt, I equate it to, like, straight out of the WWE playbook. Like, here's a team that's on the brink of elimination. What's that sound? Oh, that's Tiger Woods' music. And here he comes marching out, and Tiger Woods is ready to compete. It was clearly a publicity stunt on the eve of TGL's final night. And that's fine. It's fine if it's a move to generate ratings. This is an entertainment product. We need to stop thinking about this as real golf and what does it mean and what's the significance of this. It's supposed to be cheap, harmless, good, clean fun. And that's exactly what TGL is. And that's what TGL is sort of designed to be. They needed the boost, TGL did, from one of the biggest stars they have, one of the co-founders of the league. I have no problem with it whatsoever of how it played out. Again, I think it was unfortunate. The hope certainly was that when you have the game one on Monday night, which was on ESPN2, going up against the women's NCAA tournament, probably is not going to get as many ratings. They had a four-hour window blocked off, did ESPN on Tuesday, hoping that Jupiter Lynx could stave off elimination in game two. And then all of a sudden you have Tiger Woods in primetime in a must-win game. That was the ideal. Again, it didn't play out that way. You touched on it off the top with your long-winded rant about Tiger Woods. But how, Rex, did you think that he actually looked? I'm talking about in terms of appearance. I'm talking about in terms of demeanor. I'm talking in terms of the shot quality. I charted, as I promised on our appearance on Golf Today, I charted meticulously what went down with Tiger Woods. And if you guys missed it, if you did not want to tune in to TGO, I can rattle them off. I thought this exercise was going to take a long time based on Jupiter Links jumping into an early,
I think we have 45 seconds. Please rattle off his four shots.
I said, good God, is this going to be a four-hour investment of my time? First hole, 25-foot birdie putt lag. Second hole, hit a fairway wood from 279 yards, finished just off the edge of the green. The third hole, airmailed the green with a 120-yard wedge shot. Fourth hole, 45-foot lag. Fifth hole, 22-foot birdie putt miss. Sixth hole, as you mentioned off the top, sort of a stinger driver.
That was a cool shot.
Yeah. Seventh hole, 3.5-foot miss. We're going to get back to that in a second. Eighth hole, greenside bunker shot to 3 feet. Ninth hole, 3-wood tee shot that went about 280. That's it. That is two full tee shots, one fairway wood shot, one iron shot, one bunker shot, and four putts, none of which went into the hole. What do you make of that?
Not much, to be honest with you. Yep. By comparison, and let's be fair about this, I'm comparing this to the last time we saw him in person, or at least the last time I saw him in person with the Hero World Challenge in December in the Bahamas. And he was not moving around great. He was a little slow coming in and out of the media center. He was a little slow getting around property. That's our starting point. And so to see him last night on TGL moving really well, swinging the club really well. I think in our text group, someone pointed out that they put a video of him warming up, and I would still take that swing all of these years later. I mean, it's still an amazing
swing. Much.
Well, I mean, it's still an amazing swing. Was the speed there? No, not necessarily. That's why I really wanted this to maybe go the distance a little bit more, so we could get an idea of exactly where he was at. I think the ball speeds was right around 177 on average. Again, he was hitting some weird shots with, he was hitting knockdown shots and maybe a bunt 3-wood, whatever the case may be. Not exactly what you would anticipate. So I didn't see anything there that leads me to believe, yes, absolutely, we're going to see him at Augusta National. But on the extreme other side, there's nothing that I saw that made me roll my eyes and think that this is a publicity stunt, to your point, that all they're trying to do is generate ratings here in the finals of the TGL. I think he legitimately was ready to compete, at least compete there inside an indoor arena, where you only have to hit one shot and you can go sit down for 10 minutes. However, listening to him speak afterwards, there still doesn't seem to be a huge amount of optimism. I think the takeaway of his comments after the match, when it applies to Augusta National and the Masters, was, hey man, I'm trying. I'm trying every single day. I'm working hard. My body doesn't respond like it used to when I was 25 years old. I'm not sure his body responds like it did when he was 45 years old. He wants to play. There is no doubt in my mind, and I'm not going to be surprised if he gives it a go. As he pointed out, he's going to be in Augusta anyway that week for the Champions Dinner. He's opening up the golf course at the Patch. He has a lot of reasons to be there anyway. If there is any inkling in his mind, and all indications are he wants to play, I think he will give it a go. I'm just not sure the shots are there. Can he make the cut? Can he extend that cut streak at the Masters? Absolutely. Because he knows how to play that golf course better than anyone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely can make the cut.
No. If he can, I think the bigger issue is navigating the hills. I think getting up and down those hills, if it's cold, if it's windy, if you have difficult conditions, if it's wet, there's a lot of things that factor into it. The physical demands of playing Augusta National. I did a story about this a few years ago. I think more so than any other course, at least on the PGA Tour right now, Augusta National is the most physically demanding. And I didn't see anything last night that suggests, okay, he's up to that challenge.
Yeah, I think from a shot quality standpoint, you can't learn absolutely anything from either the chips or the putts. Nor do I think you can really take anything away from the swings, because the pacing and the cadence of the shots is so different than what you typically have during a tournament round. As Tiger Woods pointed out, I mean, he hit one shot on the third hole, did not hit another iron shot the rest of the competition. That shot on the third hole, he did not hit another full shot in the full swing until the sixth hole. So about a 30 to 45 minute break in between shots. That obviously would not happen in a tournament round at all. So I was only interested, Rex, in the shot data and the numbers that were being spit out. I was looking most specifically at ball speed. And I was looking at the carry numbers. And the Fairweatherwood shot on number two from 279 yards, he mustered, at least registered, a 170-mile-an-hour ball speed. That's pretty good, hitting the three-wood off the turf. The stinger driver that you mentioned off number six, which was a cool shot, if not a shot he'll never have to replicate again in competition with a driver. We're trying to sling it underneath a rock. 176-mile-an-hour ball speed, 274 carry with a 44-foot apex. Again, 176-mile-an-hour ball speed. To put that in context,
2 degrees of launch. 2 degrees of launch on that stinger. Yeah.
That's essentially middle of the pack, middle of the road on the PGA Tour in terms of ball speed. Now, he's only hitting a couple of shots. He's got some adrenaline going while playing for the first time. I still think, looking at him, and again, I'm not a swing theorist, but I do have eyes of my own. The swing does look laborious. It does look like he's lunging at it with his upper body. I mean, the guy is absolutely jacked. And it's easy to see with the ball speed numbers that he's still capable of producing at 50 years old. That is almost, it's just brute force at this point in all upper body strength that he is generating. That's not a surprise. His knees have been damaged. His Achilles has been damaged. His leg has been damaged. His lower back has been damaged. It's all upper body strength to generate the speed. I think you just wonder how sustainable that sort of action is over, I mean, forget just a tournament.
At week. 50, you're worrying about how sustainable his swing is at 50.
I'm saying this particular version of Tiger Woods, how sustainable it would be during a tournament competition. Again, we just saw it over 90 minutes and four full shots. I'm saying if you extrapolate that out and needing to play practice rounds on, let's say, Monday and Tuesday, you take Wednesday off, 72 holes of competition with that swing, with this body, with those numbers, it's hard to see it. And again, he was noncommittal. I'm going to be there anyway, is what he said. I don't have a great indication either way. Again, it's not like he's taking a spot in the field. It's not like there's an alternate list that Augusta National would be drawing upon. It's Tiger's prerogative if he wants to play. I do suspect we'll get an answer sometime, Rex, in the next 7 to 9 days. I don't see this dragging out until actually Masters week. He'll announce most likely sometime in the Wednesday through Friday range next week.
Well, but he doesn't have to. The Masters is a little bit different than...
Doesn't have to, but I think he would out of respect to the tournament.
Professional events. You know what? I was being shown a message by my co-host this morning, and you're right. He's in a mood. I can tell everyone, please tune in.
It's going to be
today.
A nasty, nasty 1 hour special on golf today.
He is in a mood. Yeah. The Masters is a little bit different. You don't have to commit. Essentially, you just have to show up on the first tee on Thursday, as opposed to a PGA Tour event where you do have to commit by usually the deadline is around 5 p.m. on Friday. So he doesn't have to. I don't even know if he necessarily will, given the fact that, as you and I both have pointed out, he said he's going to be there anyway. He's going to be in Augusta. There's got plenty going on that week. If he decides to show up, hit a couple balls on Monday, hit a couple balls on Tuesday, just to see how the body feels. Again, him playing, I think, is a bit of a stretch, given the fact that he wasn't even sure he could play TGL up until, I don't know, let's call it 2 or 3 weeks ago. Like, it seems that's sort of the window.
Quote, probably yesterday is when Tiger Woods said, this is again, he said on Tuesday, so probably yesterday, referring to Monday, about an actual return to competition. And I thought it was a huge red flag that he couldn't even muster, again, what ended up turning out to be four full shots, that he couldn't have even, you know, sort of stomach the idea of doing that a couple weeks ago was certainly concerning.
And it would have been worth being there for this one. Yeah, I've covered one this season. I covered, I think, one or two last season, just to see his warm-up, more so than whatever it is he did in the competition. I would have liked to have been there for his warm up to see what the ball speed numbers were going to look like. See what his, you know, sort of that range practice session was going to look like. Was he going after it like he would at Augusta National, at a regular event? You just have no idea. There's too many questions there to really extrapolate anything. But you did touch on the other one thing that I wanted to point out. This is an entertainment product. Full stop, period. That's it. This is an entertainment product. Please, someone tell Max Homa this is an entertainment product. Because whatever that interview was,
I was going to get to this. So that's the Tiger Woods breakdown. What did you make of the actual match in general and how it played out with the gameplay, what the reactions were. You mentioned sort of the discombobulated ending where no one had really alerted the audience that it was about to end. Like, what did you make of the whole championship match in general?
Are you sure you're breaking down the swings? We went 20 minutes for four shots, roughly 5 minutes per shot. So do you want more? Do you want to go? Do you have more up there?
I'm just saying, what's your general feeling about how it played out?
The fact that Jupiter made it to the finals, and I think this was a talking point after last year's finals, that somehow Rory's team and Tiger's team, I don't even think they made it to the playoffs. And that was going to be a problem because, as we just leaned into, this is an entertainment product and those are your two entertainers. Those are the two star players in this particular act. And for them not even to be in the playoffs was a problem. So the fact you had this Jupiter team that made it to the finals, the fact you had Tiger Woods doing this Willis Reed thing, and I know that's a very dated reference. Please go Google it. It's a very famous moment in Boston Celtics history.
Men of a certain vintage will get it.
Yeah, some people, I got a couple giggles and snuffles about that in the newsroom when I said it yesterday. And some of the younger producers sort of looked at me like, please be older. So I apologize for the dated reference on that front. I thought it was entertaining. I thought that part was interesting to me. I thought, and I tried to sort of talk to Justin Rose about this on Golf Today, there is an art to throwing the hammer. I don't understand what it is. It seems like Jupiter probably got it wrong, maybe on the ninth hole.
Clearly, Jupiter doesn't understand it either. And we're awaiting, as golf observers, whether Tiger Woods is going to accept the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy. If what happened on Tuesday night is any indication, Team USA should probably want to go in a separate direction, because Tiger Woods actually played a pivotal role in why Jupiter lost this. It wasn't just the 3.5 foot miss, which was sort of the biggest swing early in the triples format. They also, and it's unclear who actually threw the hammer or why they threw the hammer, but they did end up throwing a hammer on the ninth hole after LAGC drove it into a bunker on a par five. They threw a hammer trying to get 2 points, ended up backfiring spectacularly after LAGC and Justin Rose hit a great shot, hit to 15 feet, ended up taking a lead. They had a 6-2 lead to LAGC heading into the finals. And so that was a clear blunder. Then Max Homa, you mentioned his pissed off reaction afterward. He had a blunder as well. Clearly, he's actually admitted afterward he forgot the score, thought that they needed to force a hammer once again just to extend the matches when that wasn't necessarily true either. The whole thing, Rex, ended in about 5 minutes where LAGC was up 6-2. There was a hammer. There was a great shot to 4 feet for eagle. Then there was another hammer, and all of a sudden it's 9-2 after the concession on number 10. Again, this thing was supposed to go 15 holes. It ended up going 10. I was putting my kids down to bed. And so the amount of time it took me to kiss them, and we went over our favorite parts of the day and said goodnight, see you in the morning, walked back in, and they were celebrating. And I said, what has happened? How was this possible? It was a double hammer situation. And again, the broadcast was completely caught off guard by it. And all of a sudden, that became the saddest broadcast that's ever been broadcast.
Was Lily's favorite part of the day watching me on Golf Today yesterday morning? Just out of curiosity.
What was her? No, her favorite part of the day was a 2-hour nap that she took after school.
Good for her. Yeah, I can see that. I
would spring break. Spring break carryover is real.
It's absolutely real. It is funny to give you the context of this. When I walked in this morning, super producer Chloe was sitting at her desk, and her first, because I sort of walked back the theory on this was so anticlimactic, pointing out that, man, that was a really cool finish. Like, you can't take anything away from Los Angeles. They just did something that's really
pretty straight
awesome.
Eagles.
I mean, yeah, any other
that's
sport.
That's a true where were you when moment. Three straight eagles from LAGC.
It's a cool walk-off. I'm not quite sure it's that. But poor Chloe, being the producer that she is, immediately went to ESPN had to fill for so long. Yeah. And she's not wrong. I think they had 30 minutes to essentially fill until they got to whatever was next. And whatever was supposed to be next was supposed to be, I think, a post-game show. And then they were going to go straight into the 9 o'clock match if they did need to go to that third match. And so there was a lot of scrambling going on. I see it from a TV perspective. I see the letdown, as you pointed out in Matt Berry's voice, where he was kind of like, oh. Because I think everyone came to same conclusion very, very slowly. And what I would equate this to, at least those first few years at East Lake, when they introduced the FedEx Cup, as sad as this is, and we always reference it, and poor Steve Sands, at least we had Steve Sands at the board with the marker
trying to do math in his head on live TV, which is not easy. We didn't have that at all. Like, everyone had to come to their own conclusions very, very slowly. And it wasn't until you actually saw people hugging each other. And they were walking off the green back to the teeing area, assuming that, oh, yeah, we have to play the 11th hole. And it was, it's over.
The math doesn't math, I believe, was the quote.
The math doesn't math. And so that was a little anticlimactic. And again, I'm not quite sure why we couldn't have gotten there a little bit quicker. But I think on a whole, you have to look at this and give all credit to Tiger Woods. He turned this into an event that a lot of people wanted to watch. You and I probably would not have tuned in last night had he not been playing, if we're being honest.
That's absolutely true. That still doesn't quite explain what Max Homa's reaction was afterward.
Yeah,
when in an interview with Marty Smith, he said, quote, "It sucked. You're not going to get much more out of me than that." And if you were thinking that, with 30 minutes to reflect on it and how far his team has come and the great experience he's had in the post-round press conference, he would be a little bit more effusive of the experience and his teammates and Tiger Woods, his captain / coach, and apparently his player of the championship match. Nope. He said, last year we were last. This year we were second. That's it. Those are the extent of Max Homa's comments. Rex, he took this harder than when he kicked away the 2024 Masters when he made double bogey on the 12th hole on Sunday. I don't quite understand it. This was simulator golf after all. This was supposed to be fun. This was supposed to be silly. I know they're playing for $9 million, which again, cut four different ways, is the equivalent of like a second place finish at the Players Championship. But it did not quite sort of jive with the general vibe of what TGL was supposed to be.
It does not. And had he done this after blowing the Masters the way he did, I would have 100% understood it.
Yes. Like,
that's a heartbreaking loss. Not even the Masters. If you do this after losing any event, I can see where you're kind of bummed. You know, you're not going to get a lot out of me right now. I would have totally understood that reaction. This is entertainment. This goes back to the original conversations that you and I had about TGL. That the bells and whistles, the technology, the SoFi Center, all of it was going to be a draw. The names, mm-hmm. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, was going to be a draw. But for this to be sustainable long-term, it has to be personality-driven. You have to be able to meet these players. And I think over the last two seasons, there have been some personalities that probably surprised us along the way. I think Ludwig proved that he has kind of a cool personality when he's on the golf course. Look, Tom Kim may not be your brand of vodka, but I find him entertaining to watch in this particular element. I don't find Max Homa entertaining at all in this. And we talk all the time about how much personality he shows on social media. And yet you never see any of it when it's actually on the course. And this was a perfect example of how you need to be, you're an entertainer in this particular instance. You're not a competitor. You can't get in front of Marty Smith and hit him with a big fat slap fish across the face with, "I'm not happy. That's all you're going to get out of me." We needed more out of Max Homa and all of the players.
I will say, I guess you could make the argument that this underscores the point that these guys really care once the competition starts, that they're alphas and they don't like to lose. That said, I still think Max Homa took it too far. The reaction was almost morose. And I thought it just sort of came off as rude, where everyone was giddy, and it was just a little bit absurd and a little bit silly in that moment. You visited the SoFi Center this year. You and I did the podcast from the SoFi Center last year. Now that we have two seasons in the books, how do you view it?
I think as an entertainment product, to lean into the previous conversation, I do enjoy it. And look, we've seen this across sports, and I would compare it to a lot of the products that we're starting to see in sports that are essentially made for TV. I think Rivals is probably the best comparison on here, where there are fans in the arena, just like there's fans in the SoFi Center. But the idea is this is a TV product. And for a network like ESPN, for a network like Golf Channel, there are going to be windows when you need programming. And these types of events, TGL, fit those windows perfectly. So as much hand-wringing, I think, as there was specifically this year, maybe about the ratings, maybe falling off from last year. And I think a sophomore slump was pretty understandable. Even with that, I would still argue that I would be bullish on this product because of the long-term success you can envision. Also, I think it's too big to fail. when you have ESPN invested, when you have the PGA Tour invested, when you have Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy invested, they're going to find a way to make it work. I feel like this, the second season was a step in the right direction. Finishing up with Tiger Woods, I think, was a pretty good finish for what they ended up battling through the season with some injuries and some other things that happened. And there's a lot of room for improvement for season three. I would look forward to it.
Yeah, look, I think the production is incredible. I don't think there's a golf product on TV that does a better job than TGL. And that's including the PGA Tour. That's including the LPGA Tour. That's including LIV. Like, I think the production team led by Jeff Newbarth, who we've had on this podcast, like, there's incredible innovation. I think they do a great job packaging all of it in 2 hours. And I know that we live in like this polarized state where no one can agree on anything. And I would definitely put TGL in the camp where you either love it or you hate it. And there's certainly an element of the gameplay that I think is still akin to like three friends being in their living room and only two of them are playing video games. And you got the other friend just sort of sitting there drinking or eating some snacks and you're just watching others play a video game. You're like, oh, I think I would rather just kind of do this myself and it's not for me. I think there's some element to that. I think the technology still seems at least a little bit untrustworthy to the players with the muting of the mics when they're grumbling about it. That there's just too many errant misses from inside 125 yards. These are the best players in the world who have been hitting millions and millions of golf shots in their life. I promise you, if you blindfolded them and they hit shots, they can probably tell you within a 3-foot window where that ball is going to land and just some of the befuddled, bewildered looks when they see where the ball actually ends up on screen is still a little bit tough for me to square. You mentioned the ratings and the sophomore slump. I think that was anticipated as well, even with the rating system now that has big data and panel to capture more. But I'm also with you. Like it's too big to fail. The PGA Tour is a partner. They have some very smart investors attached to the teams. ESPN has given them a massive platform and all of the marketing muscle that they have as well. It is TGL is up with its TV rights still. I'll be curious to see what happens with that as well. What did you make, Rex, of sort of the player involvement in year two? Did you see any sort of tailing off on that? Are there changes that need to be made on that front?
Yeah, I think if you were going to be critical, like I think it's easy to look at the product. And you're right. I think what Jeff Newbarth and they do from a production standpoint is second to none. I mean, I think they're really on the cutting edge. Just not the technology, but even just trying to get into the competition more and more. Everything they've done, I think, is a really good sort of blueprint for what should be pulled over into the PGA Tour coverage as well. Some of it you obviously can't do. We're in a huge field at most PGA Tour events. But when it comes to interaction with the actual players, that said, I think this year you saw a little bit of, again, we can call it a sophomore slump, but where players, and I think this goes to the schedule, and I asked Justin Rose about this yesterday on Golf Today. It can be a grind for during the time of year that they're playing this, and this is when ESPN wants it. So I wouldn't imagine TGL has any interest or any ability to move out of this window. However, you're making top players, like a Justin Rose, spend a lot of time bouncing between West Coast and Jupiter, or West Palm Beach, to bounce back and forth for those matches. They try to make it as seamless as possible, but you're still getting on a plane, even a private plane, for 3.5 to 5 hours, depending on which way you're going. That's tough, and I think it wore on the players. And I think you can kind of see that. Again, I was probably a little overly mean when it comes to Max Homa, but from a personality standpoint,
guys are cranky.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I can see how you just get worn down. Now, that's a combination of TGL and the schedule that they had, and a PGA Tour schedule that didn't do them any favors whatsoever. If you start looking specifically where we are right now in the PGA Tour season, there are so many big events and so precious few weeks off to make a player like a Justin Rose or a Tom Kim to take even just a Tuesday night to, and it's just not that 90-minute window or whatever it might be that they're working. They have to go to warm-ups in the morning. It's pretty much an all-day affair. I think we probably saw the impacts of that. And I don't know how you get around it, because based on what we know about the future schedule of the PGA Tour and based on what we know the TGL schedule is probably going to remain, I think this is the way it's going to be. So it is going to be tough to fit into this window.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. As Brian Rolapp outlined a couple weeks ago ahead of the Players Championship, what was it, 26 events potentially in what we calculated to be about a 32-week span? Then all of a sudden you're adding some additional travel, coast-to-coast travel. We don't know what the schedule is going to look like. TGL is nowhere near adding an additional venue on the West Coast, either in California, Arizona, or Vegas. That's still years down the road if it ever happens at all. So I'm with you. I think the players are the real key to that. And when you look at the first 2 months of the TGL season, they had more substitutes than ever before. Through 2 months, they had about a 20 to 25% turnover rate in terms of their substitutes. No one knows how those guys were in the league, why Chris Goderup was added to the best team in the league in Atlanta Drive. There was no sort of draft. And so I think that was an indication as well that that guys wanted a little break from this. They wanted to make sure that they were going to stay as fresh as possible for what is really more of a sprint as opposed to a marathon of the PGA Tour season. Also, Rex, I think when you look at this, there's a two-year window that we've now had for the core TGL players. And you have to keep in mind that it's even longer than that because they had the one-year delay when the SoFi Center, the original dome, got damaged. They really need some fresh blood and some new faces, I think, to enliven some of the league members. I don't think golf fans, though, are necessarily going to be tuning in for, I don't know, like we had Luke Clanton and Neil Shipley moonlight during a match this year. That would help because those guys would be really eager. They would understand the concept. They would be fitting more with the younger demographic that TGL is trying to target, but they don't quite yet have the name recognition and the brand value that folks are going to be tuning in for. So I think they're at a little bit of a crossroads there as well with the actual roster construction, who they bring in, and how you can sort of make them a star in, again, what's a really short season.
No, I think that's a good point. And I think you're going to have to see, we talk about this all the time with the PGA Tour and certainly LIV Golf. There has to be some sort of filter in and filter out, right? There has to be promotion and relegation. Even though we're not going to talk about meritocracy when it comes to TGL, but if you don't get the new blood, it's going to be year in and year out. And at some point, Tom Kim's antics are probably not going to be popular on TGL if you see it year in and year out. So there has to be some sort of mechanism for them to bring in the new players, whoever that might be. I mean, I think Michael Thorbjørnsen, who we've talked a lot about over the last few months, he's an up-and-coming player, a lot of personality there, a lot of game there. I would like to see someone like that get rotated into one of these teams.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever touch the the 1 million audience that we initially had for TGL. I think the interest has probably peaked in that sense. There's nothing, no one they could bring in. Even a Brooks Koepka type would seem like a natural progression for Jupiter Links. I don't even know if that would necessarily get you back to those initial audience numbers. I could see them maybe branching out for co-ed teams. I could maybe see them, as Bryson was sort of taunting Jupiter last week, could you have a TGL versus LIV integration as well? Could you bring in some influencers? I think we're probably maxed out in the potential of the team roster as it is currently constituted, but there's other ways that you can do one-offs, celebrities, influencers,
TGL. Let me guess. Match play. You're going to say match play. It's going to save this.
I feel like I know where this is going. No, I like the format of TGL. Okay. I do think they probably need to bring in some different groups just to, again, liven up the product a little bit. Before we get out of here, Rex, we did have some news on Tuesday with Scottie Scheffler withdrawing from the Houston Open, the PGA Tour citing family reasons, expected next start at the Masters. How do you think this affects Scottie's Masters projection?
I mean, it's not going to change his odds. My guess is Vegas didn't change the numbers overnight just because he withdrew from Houston. I was actually a little surprised to see that he was going to play Houston, given the things we just talked about. And during the schedule, if you're a player like Scotty, you probably want to take advantage of whatever weeks off you can possibly get. And the fact of the matter is, and I kind of joked with Tom Doak earlier this week on Golf Today, that Tom Doak is the only architect that seems to have created a course that was Scotty-proof. And I only say that sort of halfway tongue-in-cheek because the fact of the matter is Scotty has finished runner-up here three times. He loves to play this event. It seems like a good tune-up for the Masters. He's played well here before. All that being said, there's nothing he was going to do this week that was going to change the idea that he's the favorite in my mind going into the Masters.
He was going to be the favorite regardless. I think selfishly, I would have loved to see Scotty have another start between the Players' Championship and the Masters just to learn a little bit more about where his game is. I think especially at a golf course like Memorial Park, which really favors speed and distance and power. He'd be able to let it go with the driver a little bit more than he had during the Florida swing, where he was getting a little bit guidey, missing right, which he almost never does on the PGA Tour. I think there's more questions about Scottie Scheffler than usual. I think 2 months ago, he would have been a prohibitive favorite and everyone else was playing for second. I think there easily would have been a scenario in which he'd win by 4, 5, or 6 shots. That may still happen. There's 3 solid weeks of work that he could put in on his game, particularly with his driver, particularly with his proximity to the hole and tightening up some of his iron play. Scotty is still the prohibitive favorite at the Masters. Again, would not surprise me at all if he wins. There's just more questions than usual as it relates to him. And we're not going to have any answers this week from Houston.
I'm with you, and I think we pointed this out. There's nothing that's happened this season that sends up huge alarm bells when it comes to Scottie Scheffler. He has still been dominant at the American Express. He's still played well on the West Coast. Those last 2 starts, if you're going to be a prisoner of the moment, Bay Hill and the Players Championship, statistically, there were some things there that we're just not used to seeing from Scottie Scheffler. We're just not used to seeing him struggle a little bit with his ball striking. And so you're right. I would have liked to see him maybe clean some things up. I don't know that anyone right now is better figuring that out at home on the range with Randy Smith.
Scottie Scheffler has not had 3 consecutive finishes outside the top 10 since July 2022. What did Scottie Scheffler do in 2022? Yes, he won at Augusta National. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Joe Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Sunday night for a full recap of the Houston Open. Anything else that happens in the world of golf, we'll probably touch on Tiger Woods again if there's any more news to update on his Masters participation and the will he or won't he drama. If you have any questions for the Sunday show, make sure to drop them in the YouTube comment section. Always love getting to those in the voices in the crowd section at the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
I just don't like doing math.